Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This
is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Jay Schreeder. Today on episode 261, we have a group panel of retinal specialists and how they're balancing opening and continuing their retina practices now as we are more than 6 months into the COVID-19 pandemic in most of the United States, with childcare and other family support issues given that many schools are not yet open or are open in a virtual or hybrid fashion. I am joined by Drs. Adrian Scott, Matthew Cunningham, Amy Scheffler, and Mrinali Gupta for a panel discussion discussing these issues and more that will face retina specialists as we continue to move forward through this year. Remember that a list of financial disclosures for all discussions can be found in the episode description. You can also claim CME credits for this podcast episode and many other podcast episodes on our website by clicking on the link in the episode description. That will take you to the American Academy of Ophthalmology website to claim those credits. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now privileged to be joined by four retina specialists from across the country. We're going to do a slightly U-shaped parabola from east to west. We're going to start up in Baltimore, Maryland, where Dr. Adrian Scott is joining us. She's faculty at Johns Hopkins University. Adrian, welcome.
Thank you, Jay. Great to be with you.
Next, we're going to swing south through Orlando, Florida, where Dr. Matt Cunningham, who's in a retina-only private practice, is joining us. Matt, welcome. First time.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Now we're traveling through Houston, Texas. We got Dr. Amy Scheffler, who's in a hybrid private academic setup at Retina Consultants of Houston. Amy, welcome.
Thanks so much, Jay. Honored to be back.
And last but not least, we swing back to a retina-only private practice in Orange County, California, Dr. Mrinali Gupta. Mrinali, welcome back.
Thank you, Jay. Looking forward to the discussion.
So this discussion is going to center on something that is a hot topic, not just for retina specialist parents, but parents everywhere, which is how are you handling the adjustment with coronavirus and the COVID-19 as long as schools, as well as your job? So, Adrian, I'm going to let you start. So let's talk about your child's situation. How many children do you have? Are they in school or in the hybrid setup, pure virtual setup? And what about their other activities, sports, after-school activities? How are they handling this in your area right now?
Well, I have three children, and at this point I have an 11-year-old boy, a 9-year-old girl, and a 7-year-old boy. I have quite a kind of a diverse situation with among the three of them. My oldest goes to private school, and he went home for spring break, and they never came back. However, they are planning, they've been doing home virtual learning for the last 2 weeks, and they're planning to go back in person this upcoming week. And my younger two go to public school, and basically their school is out in virtual until January. So they are going to a learning center and have like a day camp to help with the parents who are essential workers, such as myself. And they do their both virtual school from there. As far as activities go, most activities were curtailed at the start of the pandemic, but during the summer we did have the kids in some sports camps, which were socially distanced, masks required, and I just started my younger two back in their gymnastics class. Same thing, socially distanced, masks required, lots of hand sanitizer. So we're making it work week by week.
Perfect. Matt, what's the situation in Orlando in terms of your children? How many children do you have, and what's their schooling situation right now?
Yeah, so I have two daughters, 8 and 5. They're in third grade and kindergarten. They are at a private school locally, and the school actually gave two options. The first option was to either start off hybrid and then be completely brick and mortar after the second week, or the second option was to just essentially be completely virtual, virtual school. My wife's a pediatrician, and just kind of looking at the climate here in Orlando, we decided to do the complete virtual option with the potential of putting them in after the first quarter, depending on what the climate looks like out here. It's been working out for us. It's obviously has its hiccups, but that's essentially what we decided to do. In terms of other activities, they're both pretty active in their dance classes, and the gym that they normally do their dance classes at, they've done virtual classes as well as in person. So we have them doing their classes virtually. We will be starting them with local soccer shots. It's kind of a soccer practice with a few other local kids in the neighborhood who are also doing virtual schooling. And that's the situation with our girls.
Amy, how about you?
So we, you know, live in an interesting place here in Houston, Texas. For a while, we were kind of the reigning coronavirus champions, I guess, in terms of the rate of growth of the virus. It has calmed down significantly, and our, you know, test positivity rate in the Med Center is now only like 3% and change. So since the sort of underlying culture here in Texas is very sort of back to business, many of the schools are in person. I have two kids. I have a 10-year-old son and a 12-year-old daughter, and their school is a hybrid, an unusual hybrid, where they go to school one full week and then they do virtual one full week, and then they keep continuing in 2-week cycles. So they're in school half the time. And there was an option to elect remote only, but I think only 5% of the school elected that.
And Rinali, just to complete, what's your background in and with your kids right now?
Yeah, we have a little bit of an interesting story, because right around the time that the coronavirus thing started escalating, our family sort of completed our full move out west. I moved out here at the beginning of March. I have a 4-year-old son and an almost 1-year-old son. And we had just started looking into schools for our older guy when everything shut down, and we've actually decided to just hold off on school this year. We live in a neighborhood where there's tons of kids, so he's doing a lot of activities with the kids, and we're going to sign up for a bunch of sports activities outside. That's kind of where we are right now. He's not yet old enough for real school, so that's our plan right now.
So now that we have background, everyone in the group, for the audience listening, let's get into the meat of what we want to talk about, which is the dilemma that parents in America and other countries are facing: are children with various occupation with schools, more time maybe needed on the home front, whether it's for virtual school or replacement activities, etc. This was an issue maybe starting in March and April in some places, but retina practices were slower and people maybe weren't as at work as often. Some places were only doing emergent cases. There was a concordance between the availability of a working retina parent and their children. And now there's a discordance because most practices are up almost to full speed, if not full speed. And some practices are even busier than normal because of patients coming back after the pandemic closed down. So we're going to kind of circle back, Rinali. How have you and your significant other balanced now your own practice? So your practice building, now you're in a little unusual situation relative to the other people in this thread, but has your practice been receptive? What are they doing for doctors and staff as well? So forgetting the physicians, but the other staff, how do they handle the childcare responsibilities some of the staff may have?
I'm in a little bit of a different position, having just joined a practice and building a practice. And in fact, I started out part-time and kind of growing as the volume grows. But I do spend a ton of time when I'm not in the clinics, sort of visiting the referring doctors and that sort of thing. My husband and I have basically just been splitting the work. I'm super fortunate to have a really supportive and involved husband. There have been times in our life where I've done for years the vast majority of the childcare while he was really busy with his job. But more recently, he has really taken on a huge role, probably a more primary role than I have, and he's been working from home, which facilitates being able to reshuffle things and jump in when a child care issue arises, or you know, if I'm going to go do an add-on case or something like that. So, you know, we've been fortunate that his job is the type of job where he can work from home and has a little bit of flexibility on that front.
Amy, how about you? So you're also in a retina-only group, a larger, very busy retina-only group, and I understand a lot of the volume may be returning close to normal. What is the situation in terms of your home front, in terms of childcare, and how does your practice manage doctors and employees who may need to take reduced time?
So our volume is pretty much back to normal. And I think compared to other parts of the country, it didn't, you know, it dipped significantly less, both because the virus came later here and because of just kind of general sort of attitudes in Texas about it. So the reality is, and I think my situation is unusual in this regard. My childcare situation didn't really change. I have a full-time working spouse. And so in order to do my own full-time job, I have full-time childcare. I have actually since kind of the day my daughter was born 12 years ago. So, you know, I had a very nice and fortunate cushion in that way. I think if I didn't, I never would have been able to function before or during the pandemic.
Adrian, you're in a slightly different situation in an academic center where there may be more flexibility sometimes than other practices, depending on your setup. How have you and your significant other handled it in terms of childcare responsibilities? You mentioned some things earlier, but also in terms of work meetings. For example, some of the academic things are moving to different hours than they were before. For example, sometimes they're in the evenings, like this call we're doing right now. How have you balanced that in terms of also, you know, being there for your children?
You know, it's a challenge. And, you know, many of us working parents often have, the task of juggling home and work and, you know, career responsibilities, patient care responsibilities. So it's always a challenge. And, you know, interestingly, at first when everything shut down, it was almost a period of increased togetherness, which was kind of nice that my family was very happy that, you know, I wasn't traveling to, you know, meetings as much as I had planned. And, you know, it was really nice to kind of all be together. You know, my husband has been working from home and, you know, has been and still is, you know, since mid-March when things shut down in Maryland. So, you know, fortunately, he has had that flexibility to be able to, you know, cover things along the home front. You know, as far as the practice goes, we are, you know, upwards of probably 85, pushing 90% of our volume. But the way our clinics are structured, there is a split between an AM team and a PM team. So if there are four retina doctors in clinic, two of us, instead of all going concurrently, two of us start in the morning session as early as 7:30. And then, you know, the second crew will come on at the, you know, 12:30 and kind of push till 5:36. So, you know, I try to take advantage of it because on those mornings where there's a late start, I can make the breakfast and I can, you know, take the kids where they need to go. So, you know, I try to, you know, contribute in, you know, wherever I can. I think when everything first shut down and we were only doing emergent cases, I tried to start my own homeschool and I called it Adrian Academy. It wasn't very popular among the kids. So, you know, but I tried and, you know, it's given us extra appreciation for those teachers who, you know, entertain and educate our kids because it's a hard job.
Matt, I'll let you round out this part of the conversation and again, you can comment on your practice's approach to staff, to physicians. Have different doctors kind of change their hours? Adrian kind of spoke about a split sort of setup. I know you're a practice that has kind of many different offices and kind of each doctor is sort of not restricted, but spends more of their time in some regions than others. I'm sure it's been challenging because from what I have a couple of friends in your practice, I know you guys have been very, very busy even throughout this time.
Yeah, absolutely. So my practice is a little bit unique where as a whole, we have 19 offices. So most of us go to at least five satellite offices. That hasn't changed throughout COVID era. Our volume now is, for me at least, is busier than pre-COVID. My situation is a little bit different just because my wife is a pediatric hospitalist and also the recently appointed associate program director for the pediatric residency. At her hospital. So when she is working, she does the night shift a couple times a week. And prior to COVID, when she would do these night shifts, it was my responsibility to get the kids ready and getting dropped off to school. But now that we're doing virtual schooling, I've had to adjust my clinic start times on those days to begin about maybe a couple hours later than I normally would. And then I leave for clinic once my wife is home and just ready to take over. We've been fortunate in that normally she had office hours for the pediatric residency, but the actual hospital, the GME office, has just allowed them to do all of that stuff from home. So she actually still has to do all the work, but she's at home during the day. So we have been fortunate where we don't have to have too much help in terms of the kids. And, you know, she's just been really, really amazing during this time. So it's not a perfect system for us, but it's working. And, you know, as far as our employees, you know, there are issues. You know, a lot of our employees have childcare issues, and, you know, just we've just had to allow a lot of them to either take off multiple days or weeks at a time to be able to accommodate being at home with their kids if the need arises.
You know, you brought up something I'm going to use as a segue. That's an imperfect segue. You brought up that your wife is a new associate program director. And one of the things I think it's interesting to think about, we don't necessarily talk about trainees, but we're talking about doctors in practice. But what about trainees who have childcare responsibilities? And obviously, we expect a lot from medical trainees. There's kind of a culture that you kind of just, you know, you figure it out and you figure out things at home and you figure out the balancing act on your own. And to an extent, people have done that over decades. But this is a unique time. And I'm curious, Adrian, your thoughts. I mean, for fellows and residents who now have these homeschool childcare responsibilities, and financially, it's a little more hard for someone, to afford home help to help them in that situation. Do you have any thoughts on this? It hasn't come up with any of our trainees here, and I haven't heard of it coming up, but you can imagine that there are trainees who have children who may be school age, and maybe they do have a working spouse, and it's not something that can just be split in half, because we expect our trainees to work 150% sometimes. What are your thoughts on how do we titrate that, and how would you titrate it if you had a fellow or resident who had significant childcare responsibilities?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, and you know, at this point, to my knowledge, none of the retina fellows have been navigating these childcare issues. You know, they either have spouses that are the primary stay-at-home parent while they do focus on their rigorous training. You know, it's a huge challenge. And, you know, given our personalities that we are so motivated and we always give and give to the career, I imagine a lot of trainees with small children are, you know, struggling during this time. You know, there's probably a lot of unsung spouses that we never hear about that are picking up the slack to help us keep going full tilt as we always are. You know, interestingly, there was just an email that came out from Hopkins, you know, offering the opportunity for a child care subsidy. So, you know, the application process. So for a trainee or somebody or a staff member who makes under a certain amount of income, there is an opportunity to have some sort of a child care subsidy from the university. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, you know, contribution and acknowledgement of the change of quality of life for many of us.
And Amy, I'm going to kind of bring you in. You can comment on that same idea. I know your practice doesn't currently work with fellows, but you do have, you know, an academic position through Methodist and work with some trainees. And then let's kind of go into the last thing. Maybe this is more like a public message. I think one of the curious things is there's been so many more meetings and phone calls and webinars and things like that in practice meetings. Now with COVID-19, has the optimal timing of these things changed? Is there a way to, if you had to petition, I'm sure everyone's available is a little different, but given what we've seen with virtual schooling and home responsibilities, is there a new optimal timing, for example, to have an academic retina meeting? If you're saying it's going to be an hour and a half webinar, should it be at a certain time in the evening? Is a weekday better? Is a weekend better? What are your thoughts?
It's a great question. It is really amazing how much COVID has just turned the entire meeting experience upside down. I think, you know, what Adrian was sort of getting at, that it's sort of nice to have this increased family time and not have to travel and leave, is good for people's, you know, kind of work-life balance, so to speak, and time with their families. But on the other hand, you have this problem that you were alluding to, that if you have a virtual meeting that's occurring while you're sitting at your desk at home, you know, it's difficult to kind of separate and and have uninterrupted time, which is what, you know, so many work from home parents deal with. So, you know, I think this is more in terms of the exact timing, it's really more of a personal question. And it depends a lot on, you know, how old your children are, what stage they're at, and so forth. And what I always tell all the residents that I work with is that, you know, parenting is not a linear thing. Your needs and stresses change throughout the journey, and are even more drastic if you have a kid with special needs or with medical problems. So, for example, if you have, you know, very young kids, you know, who are, you know, like Manali's 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, by most of the time by 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night, they're in bed, and you could do an unlimited number of Zooms in a pretty easy way. But as your kids get older and they're teenagers, there's sort of no end to the evening, and it gets much more challenging. So it really, I think that question is variable depending on, you know, the stage of life your kids are at. So there's never going to be kind of a one size fits all. One other thing relevant to the thing you were asking before about in terms of that child care for you know, employees and residents and stuff is that we've had this same issue with many of our employees whose, you know, salaries are not high enough to support full-time child care. And one of the things we've done, which I think has been good, is tried to take particularly talented employees and figure out functions that they can do from home, you know, like working on calling back patients who've missed appointments, or, you know, rescheduling patients, or, you know, functions that can be done outside the office, and really try to give them an opportunity to get hours in outside the office.
Renal, I'll let you comment. You wrote a great editorial we were writing about how meetings have transitioned to a more virtual fashion. One of the things that we didn't really think about is timing, right? So I think we're all sort of used to the retina calendar gets kind of set, you know, American Society of Retina Specialists, the meeting's going to be somewhere in July or August, and they just pick a weekend. We're like, okay, I'm going to block that weekend off, and I'm going to make myself available. American Academy of Ophthalmology, it's going to be in October, November. There's that weekend. Okay, I'm going to block up those few days. Well, now we're transitioning to virtual meetings, which they can't necessarily be the same length, because I think the attention span to consume virtually just isn't there. So they're blocking off days, and I just find it's very, very challenging, even as a doctor wants to be involved in continuing medical education, to block the time off the same way if you're at home, especially if you have childcare or other responsibilities at home. And so the timing becomes interesting, because before we didn't necessarily account for the timing. We're just like, okay, this is the weekend we're going to do it, you know, and people are going to come. Now I'm just curious, again, from your standpoint, what do you think about timing? And again, time zones play a big role too, right? Like, it's really hard in a live meeting to draw cross international boundaries now, if you're talking about crossing the Atlantic or the Pacific. But even within the U.S., that 3-hour time difference, I'm going to bring in a basketball analogy here, but like the NBA has been like doing games at 6:30 Eastern because they just need to get a certain number of games done. The games are going to be played in the East Coast. But that's in the middle of a workday for people in the Pacific. So from a retina meeting standpoint, what do you think about timing and planning in terms of when these meetings should happen?
Yeah, great question. I mean, kudos to our profession for adapting so quickly with transitioning these meetings to the virtual format. It's been really incredible to watch that happen. But it does raise these questions, as Amy also alluded to, which is when you're not dedicated, taking some time and leaving your home and your office to go to a meeting, how do you create that separation that allows you to focus on the meeting, both from your work responsibilities and from your family responsibilities? It's not easy to be on a virtual meeting right around dinner and bath time, and the kids are making noises, especially if you're trying to present. I think it's very challenging, and we've thought a lot about this with the VBS webinars in terms of how do we pick a time that works for people on all of these time zones, works for international people? It's really, really challenging. But, you know, I think there's something really beautiful to the virtual meeting format. I think we all look forward to a time when we can meet our friends and network in real life. But the virtual meetings have sort of democratized the meeting to an extent. People who may not have, who may have things to say and things to present, but really can't take much time off from their clinics, or who have extensive family responsibilities and can't be on the, you know, the retina meeting circuit, which is really robust, can now be really actively engaged. And that's a really amazing thing. And blocking off an hour and a half here and there, though it requires some dedication and some schedule coordination, it's far easier than blocking off several days and getting on a plane and you know, canceling your clinic and figuring out childcare. So, you know, going back to your question, Jay, I think that there's no real optimal time, as Amy alluded to. it really depends on the viewership of the specific meeting and the speakers and where are they coming from, both within the U.S. and outside. And are you trying to do a series of short meetings versus a longer meeting, which by definition will have to be on the weekends? But I think that I hope that some aspect of this virtual meeting thing continues post-COVID, because it's really, I think, going to allow people who have either professional, clinical, or family obligations that prevent them from being really engaged to be a part of this process, which is really important, I think.
Matt, I can hear you there in the background. I mean, your thought process, you're somebody I know who's pretty active in terms of, you've been going to meetings, you'll pick a couple of big meetings to go to a year beginning. You're in a big, busy practice and you've got your family. And so maybe you're a little more academically involved than the average person who goes to meetings in a year, but how do you kind of view your year and your structure? Like, are you still going to block off those times for Academy and SRS? I mean, there's certain things that people do for CME. There's certain social aspects and networking aspects that are lost with these meetings. What do you think about the timing of these meetings, the length, et cetera?
Yeah, you know, I think Rinaldi and Amy brought up some really, really good points that, you know, I was actually discussing with my wife the other day. And we were just saying meetings will never be the same again. And regardless how you feel about it, you know, for us, before we even get to the national meetings, for us, we usually meet as a group at least every other month. And since we have 13 docs who live anywhere from Orlando all the way up to Jacksonville, we all have to drive about an hour to a meeting place. And we were doing that every other month. Since COVID hit, we have not met in person, and we've done all of our practice meetings via Zoom, which has actually worked out great. And I cannot actually fathom a time where, you know, all of us are going to be super excited about, you know, driving an hour after a busy clinic to meet until 10 p.m. and then drive an hour back home. In terms of the meetings, virtual meetings, I do think ASRS and VBS had excellent virtual meetings this year. And I think they, you know, Rinaldi brought up a good point. They showed us two different types of meetings. Like ASRS was over the weekend and it was kind of a marathon, and VBS kind of gave it to us a little bit piecemeal during the week at night. For somebody like me who has two younger kids who are usually sleeping by 8 o'clock, the VBS virtual meetings worked out perfectly. I think it was a great time to just get the same information you'd be getting in person, and I feel like I didn't have to necessarily rearrange a 60 to 80 patient clinic to get there. I do think I do enjoy the aspect of actually interacting with my colleagues and actually seeing them face to face. So I do foresee myself still going to the ASRS or AAO or VidBuckle meeting or, you know, ClubVid. It seems like there's more and more meetings every year, but it's going to be hard because nobody knows what the national climate is going to look like in 2021 with COVID, or even after a vaccine is available. So it's a very fluid topic, Jay, and I think we're all going to just be interested to see what happens in the future.
Adrian, I'll let you give the last comment to this very generous group that's given a lot of time to this call. Your thoughts on meetings, timing, and then maybe a comment. You know, one of the things I think is a shame, I remember as a fellow, I've said this before, it was so exciting as a trainee or resident fellow to get to go to some of these meetings and the networking and all those aspects. Matt just referenced maybe meetings don't go back to the way they were before, certain meetings like practice meetings or smaller, more regional meetings, maybe even some national meetings. Just the advantages of virtual meetings, Rinaldi and then Matt outlined are there for sure. But I just feel a little badly for some trainees, even the trainees who aren't going to get to interview for residency or fellowship and travel the country and go and see places they wouldn't otherwise seen. I mean, is this just going to be a paradigm shift? Do you think that maybe it's just a paradigm shift that we're going to tell our trainees in 5 or 10 years about the days when we used to do this and they'll look at us like we're a little bit crazy because this generation just doesn't view it the same way? Or do you think that there will be some of a return to normalcy over the next few years, assuming that we don't have second waves, third waves, et cetera?
You know, absolutely. This is a very interesting and challenging time. You know, regarding the meeting and time of meetings, you know, Matt and Manali and Amy brought up great points. You know, I read
I think it was on Twitter somewhere that somebody mentioned it's not working from home. Now, you know, work is at home, meaning, you know, we're always working all the time. There's really no separation where you can just be at home and relax because it's always overlapping, which I think many of us feel like we're busier than ever. You know, it was, you know, kudos to these amazing meetings that pivoted so quickly and were able to do the you know, virtual platforms, but, you know, there was a lot of work behind the scenes and a lot of coordination with the technical components of things. And these meetings that came off so smoothly were just, you know, there were rehearsals and, you know, AV, you know, dry runs. And so it's a lot of work to go into this virtual platform. So I think that, you know, as opposed to going to a meeting where you're, you know, you go, you fly, you present, you're done, and that meeting's over, you know, this has been, you know, kind of more of a prolonged meeting experience for all the different meetings. Now, that being said, I think, you know, as colleagues have pointed out, it's kind of nice in a way because the meetings have been presented so concisely, like ASRS was just rapid fire, you know, have all the talks were 60 seconds and that was it. And you got really the salient points and everything was very concise and condensed. So, you know, that was a good advantage. You know, I do have to say, I think going forward, you know, depending if the pandemic is so unknown, you know, as far as what the future is going to hold, I think there will be more virtual meetings, although I think many of us do miss the in-person interaction. And I definitely feel for the trainees who, you know, miss the networking and being able to actually get to visit the places that, you know, to which they're applying and interviewing. And there's nothing that really can tell you about the feel of a place and actually seeing it and, you know, putting yourself in that environment. So, you know, I think the future is uncertain, but I think this virtual world has definitely, you know, helped us expand our skill set in technology and, you know, concise communication. And, I'm glad that I came up through a time when I was interviewing that I didn't necessarily have to navigate the virtual world. But I think these younger people who are, you know, more facile with the technology are going to handle it in stride and, you know, things will hopefully go back to normal soon.
I heard recently from one of the fellows that works for me that there are some fellowships that have decided, presumably because they just don't want to deal with Zoom interviews, to just not take outside candidates this year, which I think if it's true, it might be urban legend, is just so sad for this crop of fellows. Residents and fellows, you know, because it limits their, you know, their options so much. And I just feel for them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is unfortunately going to be a human tendency, maybe from in a field where doctors generally tend to be risk averse compared to other professionals. You're going to find both applicants and programs, and programs have more power in this process than applicants, and for better or for worse, that may choose to take known commodities, that may choose not to expose themselves to maybe missing something in the interview. Maybe we're overplacing importance on an in-person interview. Maybe if you did an analysis, you'd find that a virtual interview or just a read of an application would give you just as good a chance of getting a good resident or fellow. I think our gut tells us it's not true, but our guts aren't always right. But yes, that is definitely a concern, Amy, and hopefully most programs do not err and veer in that way this year. Well, guys, thank you so much for being generous with your time. Adrian Scott, Matt Cunningham, Amy Scheffler, and Mrinali Gupta, thank you again for sharing your thoughts on COVID-19 and kind of balancing that with family life at home and then what it means in terms of implications going forward. I'm sure this is a topic that will continue to get more discussion as more places open. For example, here in Miami-Dade, we're still all virtual and schools may be going back in person at some point, but that hasn't been announced. So, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 261 episodes can be found there sorted by category. In addition, you will find links to subscribe so you can receive updates on the latest episodes as they get released, and those updates can be sent directly to your email. Other ways of accessing our program, if you have an Apple or Android mobile device, you can find this in the podcast section there. We also post the latest episodes on Facebook and on Twitter at Retina Podcast. You can contact me at any time by emailing us directly at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to your feedback, things we can do better, episode ideas for the future, and we appreciate anyone who leaves reviews in the Apple or Android store. Many thanks to the four retina specialists who joined me for this program, Drs. Adrian Scott, Matthew Cunningham, Amy Scheffler, and Mrinali Gupta. Thanks to our production team, Dr. Louis Kine, Dr. Angela Tang, and our social media editor, Dr. Michael Anacasa. Thank you, listeners, for the patient care you deliver on a daily basis, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here each week, and for listening. This is Jay Schreeder, signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.
Take care. Bye-bye.